Matt Mittler here, and we're winding our way to the bleary end of Kaufman's Holiday. Part 1, Pagan Rites. Feeling kind of dark, ain't it? Well, what'd you expect? This is Sunday Night Noir. We're hitting the road with episode 5 now. Better fasten your seatbelts. Chapter 36. They'd spent the remainder of the night on the roof, watching as charcoal clouds made way for an amber sky. Saturday. Sabbath. Shabbat. She'd nodded off against his shoulder. He could have almost remained like that, but his butt had fallen asleep on the milk crate and was now embedded with a waffle print. Besides, sooner or later he'd need to return to the real world. His weekly retainer didn't provide for a day of rest. He gave Allegra a playful nudge.
"Hey, Sleeping Beauty. Last call was hours ago."
She groaned and hid her face in his chest.
"I know a manager. He'll cut us some slack."
"Come on."
He hoisted her up. Sun gilded the edge of the town. Kaufman remembered mornings like these with Therese, sitting on the beach as dawn rose over the ocean. Whether he and Allegra had been in any danger no longer mattered. For now, they were safe. They stood on the roof and watched as Newport warmed over and began to come to life. Allegra snapped up his hand and gave it a swing.
"How about I fix us up some eggs?"
How could he say no? He bid adieu to the golden sky and followed her inside and down a flight to her apartment. Soft-hued and cozy, it was the kind of place Kaufman might have had he ever made the effort. Allegra placed a disc on the RCA.
"Ellington?" he asked.
"Ha! You trying to impress me, Sunbeam?"
She squared off in front of him.
"Name the tune, and I'll put some sugar in your tea."
"Who says I drink tea?"
"Just name the tune, Smarty Pants."
"Black Beauty?"
"I'll give you 3 tries. Is that one, or are you just admiring my ebony exterior?"
"Prelude to a kiss?"
She wrapped her arms around his neck.
"We way past that marker."
"Black, brown, and blue?"
"You don't know nothing."
"Close?"
"It's beige. And you're still wrong."
She pushed off him.
"No sugar, then?"
"Nope."
"Ask me about Gershwin, and I'll nail it."
She dismissed him with a wave of her hand and headed into the kitchen, added an extra wiggle just to rub it in. Kaufman slipped off his jacket and hung it on the back of a bentwood rocker.
"Mind if I hop in the shower?"
"You think I'd let some sap anywhere near my plumbing? There's a towel behind the door."
Kaufman paused to study her in the kitchen nook, framed under a bowed arch. Morning light filtered in and caressed her left side, highlighting her tight waist and round hips. He closed his eyes, planting the image, then stepped quietly into the bathroom. A moment later, he opened the door and stuck out his head.
"New day coming?"
She didn't even turn around.
"New world a-comin'. Besides, You used up your 3 tries. He hung his head.
Oh, you're hard.
And closed the door. Chapter 37. Kaufman nearly tumbled over the boulder that blocked his way.
You sleep with her!
Deuce craned his bespoken torso, his neck being immobile, and revealed a ring of white powdered residue around his mouth. Kaufman spotted a half-eaten donut in his hand and figured it would take at least one more bite before that hand could become a fist.
Even if I did, it wouldn't be any of your business. Don't you have any other clients? Oh, I got other clients,
Deuce said as he rose to his full 6.5 feet.
But I only got one sister.
That news placed Kaufman in an even more precarious predicament. He backed up the steps.
You know, I could mess you up something fierce. No doubt about it.
Kaufman watched as Deuce carefully folded the handkerchief and used the clean side to tidy his mouth. The mouth broke into a wide, gap-toothed grin.
Seems legs ain't your only admirer.
Kaufman looked quizzical.
You know a guy wears a black trench coat and a fedora?
Deuce sucked a finger.
Walks with a cane?
Kaufman leaned back against the doorpost.
I ain't so quick on my feet, but while I was following you and Legs, I caught him on the same route, right by Storer Park. Funny thing was, he didn't seem to catch me, at least not until I smacked him upside the head with a garbage can. Fella never saw it coming. I dragged him off to a rowboat and sent it adrift. Went home to catch a few hours, then came back here to make sure nothing else exciting was going on. I don't want my sister hang around with you, Kaufman, but if she does, I don't want her hurt.
Kaufman wanted to hug him, but settled on a handshake.
Let her sleep a while longer, will you? She can fill you in on the back story.
He paused.
We didn't do anything, Deuce. Became a long night on the lookout. Had a grade-A omelet, and that's the end of the chapter.
Deuce kept hold of Kaufman's hand. The grip was a few notches on the tight side.
You know that garbage can?
He grunted.
What about it? I've been carrying it for 7 blocks. Was gonna use it on your head.
The grip relaxed. Kaufman massaged his digits and stepped off the stoop. He smiled at the wall-eyed giant and called out as he walked away,
I loves you too, Porgy.
Chapter 38. When Kaufman entered the Redwood Library, there was only one other patron. He found him by the 800 rack. Fiction.
You know, you really don't have to read the whole thing. See here? The dame done it.
Reading right to left also works with Hebrew, Goldie. Goldstein slapped the book closed and returned it to the shelf.
I'm looking for a good story.
with or without pictures.
Oh, you gotta have pictures.
Well, you're in the wrong alley, pal. Try natural history.
Tried it already. Those nose rings give me the heebie-jeebies.
Kaufman settled himself on a footstool.
Anything new?
Goldstein scanned the shelves.
Welp, Mara and the Glenn kid went to the movies last night. The Body Snatcher. Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi.
Ain't that a pair?
Yeah, except they wasn't playing monsters.
I'm talking about Mora and the boy. Thought you said there wasn't any hanky-panky. You nearsighted or something?
Hey, my peepers are perfect. There wasn't any hanky or panky. They sat in the 7th row. Didn't even neck. Glenn's a nervous sort. Got up 3 times during the show. Popcorn once, bathroom twice. Missed the end where Karloff's got this dead body in a bag, and it suddenly comes to life. Boo!
There you go again, spoiling the end for me.
Shucks, Mo. Thought you'd seen it. Scary stuff, but I was still expecting monsters.
So, nothing more?
Not on my plate, other than we raised 1,000 big ones for some colored guy in Boston.
Goldstein fingered his bald spot.
You're looking a little bleary-eyed.
It was a long night.
Kaufman chewed on his lower lip.
Meanwhile, I think I got an army Jew. An officer.
So you're back on Eli's good side.
I was. Then I blew it. Got some bum on my tail. He left a marker on Eli's door. Judith hit the ceiling.
I gewalt.
You said it. Anyhow, things are a little sensitive. I'm drawing the curtains. You're still clear, so let's keep it that way. I gotta take a slight detour. South.
Watch out for wrong turns.
When I want a psychic, I'll give you a call.
Just cross my palm with gold.
Speaking of which...
Kaufman pulled out a crisp C-note and handed it over.
Don't spend it on some broad.
Goldstein chuckled.
Now who's the psychic?
He sidled up to Kaufman.
Got a date at the Strand. It's a matinee, but you never know.
Poked his head out of the racks and wiggled his eyebrows.
The librarian.
Kaufman followed the bead in Goldstein's eyes. He'd walked right past Charlene that morning. Never even took note. He patted his partner on the shoulder. At least one of them would be observing the Sabbath. Chapter 39. Kaufman considered going back to Allegra's, but he'd have to watch his step for a while. That wasn't how he liked to play the game, and it made him want to hurt somebody. Sooner or later, he'd have to take the stalker out of the picture. Meanwhile, it would be best for everyone to just skip town. He could get a decent night's sleep back in Providence and be on a train to New York in the AM, but it would pay to signal ahead, keep surprises to a minimum. Saturday was busy at the post office. Worried women, some with babes in tow, sending letters off to loved ones. The line for telegrams was shorter. Kaufman ascended the steps and was intercepted in an instant.
Enjoying your stay in Newport, Mr. Kaufman.
Peter Glenn didn't seem quite as cordial as he'd appeared earlier in the week.
How's the article for a look coming along?
He asked coolly. Kaufman didn't expect to find him here on a Saturday. Figures the wife would have filled him in. Chin out, head back, Glenn seemed to cast his radar wide enough to take in the whole room. He couldn't have seen more if he'd had 3 good eyes.
Journalism. It's a tedious business,
Kaufman offered lamely.
Funny, Mr. Kaufman. I'd have thought it would be filled with glamour. Meeting new people. Travel.
A kid dropped a tin truck on the marble tiles. Glenn cocked a disfigured ear in that direction.
Of course, I suppose you must encounter a fair number of folk who'd prefer not to meet you. Might feel you're snooping around. Might think you're a busybody or something. Asking questions. Prying into personal affairs.
Yeah, that happens often enough.
Kaufman was caught in the searchlight.
But sometimes we ask questions that need asking. Questions no one else will ask.
Sounds dangerous.
It can be, Mr. Glenn.
Well?
Glenn stepped forward, almost standing on Kaufman's toes.
Sometimes answers don't make it any better,
he said, speaking to an area just above the Borsellino. Kaufman studied the striations on Peter Glenn's face. What answers could provide consolation here?
You know, Mr. Kaufman, I spent a good portion of my life putting out fires. Some people think I sacrificed my life doing that. But it wasn't a sacrifice. I did what I wanted to do, what I was good at, what I was made to do. I knew the risks, and I took them anyway. I put myself in God's hands. I didn't know your folks, but I tried to save their lives. It's nothing special. It's what our boys are doing out there in Europe and over in the Pacific, trying to save lives. Some have taken their licks just like me. Some worse. Some come back looking fine on the outside. But on the inside, they're more scarred up than this ugly mug you're staring at right now.
Kaufman flinched. Glenn continued.
My boy, Bradley. I can't say what's going on with him. I wish he'd talk to me, and maybe he will someday. But I understand if he won't. Words don't always much matter. Meanwhile, I just pray for him. I pray for my whole family. You pray, Mr. Kaufman?
The question stung him. He'd never even lit a candle for his parents, or Therese. He swallowed hard.
No, I don't think I do.
Glenn closed his vacant orbs. When he opened them again, they seemed almost translucent.
I'll pray for you, Mr. Kaufman,
he said hoarsely.
I'll pray for you.
He held out his hand, hairless, molten textured. Kaufman grasped it limply. He had no words for Peter Glenn. He tried to speak through the palm of his hand, through his fingertips. Blindness hadn't stopped this man from doing his work on Earth. Here he was, still protecting, still putting out fires. Glenn slowly released Kaufman's hand, delicately guiding it away. Kaufman took the cue and went over to stand in line for telegrams. Chapter 40. The wire had been concise. Dash, Lieutenant Colonel Suick, Dash, 408 Old Orchard Road, North White Plains, New York, Dash, received contact from ADL, will arrive Monday 6-4, Must talk, R.E., mutual friend, Dora, - M. Kaufman, - Providence. At least the officer would know his visitor was a fellow Jew, if that even mattered. Kaufman stood on the deck of the ferry eating a hot dog, non-kosher. Today, lunch would be without ceremony. The post office closed early on Saturdays. He pictured Glenn and family gathered around the supper table, hands held, intoning grace, praying, prayer, pray. He mulled over the word. It simply wasn't in his vocabulary. P-R-E-Y, that meant something. Pay, something else, and not too far removed. Wasn't prayer a form of payment? Payment to God? God, I beseech you. God, smite my enemies. Praise God. Give thanks to God. Everything gets paid for eventually. Sometimes after the fact. Sometimes in advance. Sometimes with gratitude. Sometimes with blood. Kaufman didn't want to pray or pay, but payment had been exacted. Paid. Pain. Waves churned against the bow of the boat, slapping the oxidized sides. Spray spit up over the railing. Kaufman looked down into the primordial swirl and wondered what his parents would have paid for, what millions of Jews could have paid for, and Patty Walsh smashed on the flagstone, and Jimmy Fry smashed at the bar, and Peter Glenn, sightless, Johnny Reed, legless, Therese Pacheco. Human sacrifice. What God asks for that. He stepped away and tossed the last bite over the bow. Johnny Reed. Kaufman hadn't considered interrupting the kid's morphine dreams. But why the hell not? He wasn't likely to run away or pull a knife. Besides, maybe he could use a visitor. And maybe Kaufman could get an angle on what Johnny Reed was paying for. St. Joe's was over on Broad Street between Peace and Plenty. They took in everybody, always had. These days, it was lousy with wounded GIs. Kaufman walked down the corridor of C Unit, queasy from the smell of ether. He could hear moans coming from every other room, but kept his eyes pinned straight ahead. In a place like this, blindness could be a blessing. Reed was at the end of the hall, private room. Probably just luck of the draw. He lay on his back, tubes running into his arm, rocking back and forth, his free hand pressed against his temple. Somewhere around where his knees should have been, large lumps puffed up the clean white bedsheets. Below that, the linens lay flat. Kaufman thought about the little dolly he'd bought for Rachel, the one with the holes where you used your fingers for the legs. An unfortunate image locked on his mind.
Lieutenant Reed?
The lad's hand hit the metal railing on the side of the bed and he sprung up. His small eyes were red and mean. He blinked them a couple of times, then hissed at Kaufman.
Who the fuck are you?
Mo Kaufman. I'm a private investigator.
This kid wasn't going to play ball no matter what he said.
You looking for my legs? 'Cause other than that, you can go fuck yourself.
Sorry about your legs.
What makes you sorry? You fight?
No.
Kikes can't even save their kike-ass kin. Get out of here.
I'm on the Walsh case.
Oh, that's a charmer. Bring a yid into Ochre Point.
Reed started to cough. His face flushed. He banged a fist against the bed rail.
Give me a cig.
Sorry, kid. Don't smoke. You probably shouldn't either. Hospitals are touchy that way.
Fuck hospitals. Dig in the drawer there.
He gestured to the nightstand, laid back, and returned his hand to his brow. Kaufman fumbled through the drawer. A couple of movie mags, bag of jelly beans, and sure enough, one pack of Lucky Strikes. Kaufman tapped the carton and proffered a butt. Reed swiped it and flipped it into his mouth.
Light me,
he ordered.
Should I ask the nurse for matches?
There's a lighter in there, too.
What kind of lighter? Kaufman steeled himself, dug back in the drawer, but all he found was a stainless steel Zippo. He cupped it in the palm of his hand. No inscription, but it raised the hair on the back of his neck. He flashed on the group portrait from the Daily News. Reed's malicious grin, the lighter held aloft. That one was nicer. Maybe sterling.
What? You fall into a trance or something? Fork it over, dogface.
Kaufman wanted to grab the punk by his stumps, but reached over and snapped the flint, held the flame under the cigarette, watched the paper ignite. Reed took a steady draw. Blonde and baby-faced, he looked like some deviant choir boy. He blew out the smoke in a thin stream and clinched his eyes. The lower half of his body began to quiver. Kaufman tried to feel sorry for him. Couldn't.
Red Cross bring you these supplies?
Kaufman asked, eyeing the pack of Luckies.
Got a bud. Shows up once in a while.
He flicked an ash to the floor.
What's your game, schmo?
The name's Mo, and I'm trying to figure out who, if anyone, murdered Patrick Walsh.
Another hefty drag. Reed held it in while he spoke.
Was in the papers. An accident. Jews can't read.
He spit a cloud in Kaufman's face. Kaufman brushed it away, looked around. The room was bare. No cards. No flowers.
We read Hebrew right to left. Helps us see things from a different perspective. Like, I can look at you, lying here, cropped above the knees, and think there might actually be some kind of justice in the world.
Fuck you, you stinking heeb! Get the fuck out of here!
Reed's voice couldn't handle the volume. He began to hack uncontrollably. Every cough sent spasms into his thighs. Looked like he was undergoing electroshock. He slapped a fist against his chest and threw his arms back on the mattress, clutching the cigarette protectively in his other hand. Kaufman plucked the cigarette from his trembling fingers, blew on the tip to keep it lit, tapped an ash into the cup of his hand.
How many enemies you need, Johnny boy? You're all alone. No sympathy cards, nothing. Mommy can't visit her wounded son? Too torn up mourning the death of Captain Jack? Yeah, your pop's the real hero. You're only a fraction of the man he was, less now. Just some painful reminder to the little lady of what she's lost. She probably walked into this room, took one look, puked her guts out, and never came back. You'll keep here for another month or so, then be out in a wheelie chair, ready to wave a flag in the next VFW parade.
Kaufman handed the cigarette back to Reed.
Looks like your last pack.
I flew 63 missions, fuckhole. I got a fucking purple heart.
So did Patrick Walsh. They're a dime a dozen.
He leaned in.
And what did the captain get? A Navy Cross? Medal of Honor?
Distinguished Service?
The boy held Kaufman's gaze. Kaufman softened.
I'm sure he was a good man, your dad. Can't blame you, not being able to match up. At least you cut out the crap, tried to do something honorable with your life.
What did it get me? I lost my fucking legs.
The cigarette was burnt to a nub. Reed snapped it into the air with his forefinger. It flew across the room and smacked against the wall in a shower of sparks. Kaufman offered him another.
You don't have to ration them. I'll bring a whole carton next time.
Pat was a punk,
he sneered.
We were all punks. Would somebody want to kill him? I don't know. Yeah. Sure. We all did stuff. I'm not proud of it. You think I went over to prove something? My old man couldn't care less. He went down before I even made lieutenant. Figured I'd bite it over Okinawa. Straight shot to hell. That would have been the easy way out.
Reed stared at the empty space at the foot of his bed.
I was coming back from a hop. My tail shot to shit. Couldn't hold it steady. Took a lob on the main deck. Found myself in the ICU. Legs were already clipped. But I didn't know it. Pain shot all the way up from my toes. Still does. Ain't that a lock?
Can't say I trade places.
Nah, I didn't turn green. Bradley's mother was with her. She cried and all, but you're right. She hasn't come back.
I'm kind of curious about your buddy Bradley and the other boys. Like to go down the list with you, Johnny. Maybe you can fill in the blanks.
I ain't talking about the gang stuff.
You don't have to. I just want to know about the week Patrick was back.
I was here.
Yeah, I figured. And James Fry?
There's my tobacco source. Seems to have dried up. Can't say the same for Fry.
Know what you mean. What about Bradley?
Shit, he'll never even called. But I don't blame him. He was a patriot, but he really wasn't one of us. Never. Not like Pat or Rob or Jimmy. He was there and all, but he probably wished he wasn't.
How's that?
Don't push it, Dick. I'm not going back.
Kaufman sat down on a radiator by the window. A warm breeze batted the back of his jacket.
But he was tight with Patrick, right?
Clayton liked having Brad on patrol, and Brad liked the girl.
Mara?
Yeah, but she probably never knew it. He was always too goody-goody.
Not good enough to keep you guys out of trouble.
Maybe out of worse trouble. For a while, at least. Then we went too far, and he stopped trying.
Reed placed the cigarette sideways on his chest and let it roll down to his lap.
And then what?
Kaufman asked quietly.
Reed shrugged.
We all went off to war.
He picked up the stick and ran it under his nose.
Give us a light, P.I.
Kaufman obliged, considering the Zippo.
So, you all went off, and that was the end of the Patriots.
That was Clayton's plan. Seemed to work pretty well.
I guess he could do whatever he wanted. Could he have killed his own son?
Reed took a slow drag.
If Clayton wanted somebody dead, he'd have known how to do it right. And he wouldn't have done it himself. But I can't see it. He got a kick out of us, as long as it didn't come back on his doorstep, which eventually it did.
He looked up at Kaufman, smoke curling from his chapped lips into his nostrils.
I'm sure he wished Pat had more going on in the noodle factory. Probably why he liked having Bradley around, but he palled with all of us. The captain was never like that. My dad hated me and my friends.
Reed let out a phlegmy snort.
You could put him on your list, but he's got an alibi.
Kaufman felt like a sandbag had dropped on his shoulders. He found himself gazing at the morphine drip running into Reed's blue vein.
Your dad would be proud of you, kid, if he was still alive. He'd be here by your bed every day. And your mom, she'll come around. Give her time.
Reed toughened up again.
What do you know? He wasn't even there.
Nope, I wasn't.
Kaufman hung his head, rubbed the back of his neck. Then he heard a faint, high-pitched cry, like from some wounded animal. When he looked back up, Reed was wincing with pain and rocking side to side.
I gotta go, Kaufman said, looking away. But I'll be back in a few days.
You coming back?
Reed clenched his teeth.
You ain't got enough punishment?
Kaufman straightened his tie, fixed his hat.
I owe you a carton of Luckies.
As he stepped out of the room, Reed called after him.
Hey, Mo! What if Walsh took his own life? What if he killed himself? You know, you can't always tell what's going on in another guy's head.
Chapter 41. Kaufman grabbed a tin of stew at the local market, sat in his dingy apartment with the blinds drawn, eating it out of the can. Didn't even bother to turn on the radio. Saturday, June 2nd. He'd barely been on the case a week. He stripped and slammed onto the lumpy mattress. First chance at a decent night's sleep. But he kept thinking about his parents, about Judith and the kids, about Allegra. He wanted to ride his hands over her satin skin, feel her touch. He flipped over on his other side. Ribs still smarted from Officer Hardy's size 12s. Turned back around. The clock on the nightstand sneered. 11:25. Probably wouldn't be any less restless with Allegra in his arms. A drink would settle him. No, it wouldn't. No, he had to keep the target in his sights. Had to keep moving forward. He tore off the sheets and got up. Who was he trying to fool? Sully's was far too convenient. The route through Fox Point only took him 10 minutes. Led him past clusters of Portuguese, sidewalk congregations, stoop squatters, speaking seductively, hands dancing to the words. The soft cadences caressed his ears. The zzzes, the kshizzes, sounding like secrets. He stood on the sidewalk and stared into the glass front of the tavern. His sober reflection hovered in the foreground, shaded, sinister, not unlike his trench-garbed nemesis back in Newport. He tried to look beyond himself into the darkened bar, but the figure gazing back wouldn't get out of his way. What was he doing here? Flopping in Fox Point in a pool of Portuguese. Every chop in the settlement, every sultry syllable, doused him with images of Therese.
Bonjour.
Not while you're driving.
Kaufman laughed and pushed her face away. She leaned over again, pouty-lipped.
Bonjour. Watch the road. I'm never letting you drive again.
The flask was almost empty. He tipped it upside down and opened his mouth. She yanked it from his hand. A banshee scream.
Meio! Bebida!
She polished off the last few drops and tossed the flask in his lap, licked her lips and growled.
Meio! Amanche!
The flask only held half a pint. Not enough to do much damage traveling solo, let alone in a pair. But he'd refilled the pewter a number of times, and together they'd managed to polish off an entire fifth. He liked to get lit with her. She was wild. No cares, no concerns. And, until the inevitable blackout, he'd feel like a free man. They'd been watching the sunset and necking in Benton State Park, sitting in his heap, a 37 radio blue Plymouth coupe convertible, but the top was usually down. He got it used for half-large the year before. Needed a few touch-ups, but could still strike a pose like a movie star. She'd wanted to get behind the wheel, and he let her. They were taking a reckless cruise along Ocean Drive. Up ahead, the Castle Hill Lighthouse beckoned, its serene beam gently arcing over the bay. He was slouched back in his seat, watching the stars swirl overhead, when the car dropped some 6 feet onto the rock landing. The slam sobered him in an instant. He swung a look to the girl, but she was off, seemed to be viewing the scene through a kaleidoscope, amazed, uncomprehending. The convertible began to nose down the embankment, metal scraping under their feet. Kaufman reached out his left hand to protect her perfect face. He braced his right on the dash. As the car flipped over, his left hand came up against the rearview mirror. 2 digits snapped back, and the flesh sliced off from a third. His right hand remained planted, and he found his body leaving the seat, upending in a one-armed handstand. He watched her, inverted. She was pressed against the wheel, dark curls flowing forward. She turned to him, eyes half-closed, freckled cheeks still glowing. In the corner of her smile, he could see a tiny trickle of blood. His face hit the top of the windshield as he vaulted from the car, cracking his jaw and tearing a jagged gash along his forehead. He vaulted through the air and landed like a discarded rag doll on a pile of pitted stone, watched helplessly as the Plymouth plunged down the granite and burst into flames. The Castle Hill Lighthouse continued to scan its cold white ray back and forth, and back and forth, and back and forth, and Kaufman sunk into oblivion. His hands were shaking. No, everything was shaking, from his Florsheims to his fedora. He glanced up at the neon sign, Sully's Tavern, buzzing with a bright blue glow, all the letters intact. Kaufman Jewelers was only gold paint on dark wood. Would have been nicer in neon. Kauf Allures. That's how it read now. Gone were the center letters, man and Jew. Where were they? Maybe he was the part that was missing. He was one step from the threshold, from damping down the memories, a spritz over sawdust on a barroom floor. But he wouldn't be drinking tonight, much as he wanted to. Tonight, he'd let the sadness sluice over him. He'd remember everything. He'd go back to his apartment, empty and alone. Back to the beating heart of Fox Point. Right off Transit Street. On the corner of Hope. Well, that ends part one of Kaufman's Holiday, Pagan Rites, chapters 36 to 41. But before you get all verklempt, understand there's two more parts to go. Hey, it's a novel. I'd like to thank Chris Durian for letting me use Case Closed, this swell tune that's been opening and closing our show. And Arthur Rosen for composing and playing all that hot diggity original music. that glues this whole operation together. I'll play some more of his stuff to round out the program at the end. I'd also like to thank my wife, Karen Hatt, for keeping me on the straight and narrow. Vivian Ubel for saying, "Hey, you should be on radio." Dana, Vincent, and all the good folks at the Monday Night Writers Group. Jack, Dale, Meg, and that previous writing group I was in. Rob Sternitsky for providing some much-needed copy editing. Yasha Hoffman for getting me set up and ready to hit record. Bennett Tyson for a stiff shot of morale. Those palookas over at Radio Free Brooklyn. Especially Robert Pritchard, who's been a pal of mine since, well, since Fakakta High School. Rhode Island Historic Preservation Specialist Barry Simpson for making sure Kaufman didn't miss his ferry. And a very special thanks to Colonel Leon B. Suick, who took the time to tell me what it was really like for a Jew during the war. Kaufman's holiday is dedicated to my father. I didn't manage to finish it before he passed, but I think he would have liked it. Radio Free Brooklyn relies on you listeners out there to keep things humming. So cough it up, Buster. Yeah, I'm talking to you. Any amount counts. A groggy, a kopeck. You get what I mean? Plus, there's some nifty perks for giving. All you gotta do is go to radiofreebrooklyn.com/pledge. You can also sponsor a show, like, say, Sunday Night Noir. Now, wouldn't that be the cat's pajamas? Once again, this is Matt Mittler signing off. But I'll be back. You'll hear me coming. My floor chimes clacking on the cobblestones. And here's a little more piano, courtesy of Mr. Arthur Rosen. Now, nice and sad. Just the way we like it.
Thank you.
What's that? I still got 2 minutes left? You gotta be kidding me. All right, then. I'll dip into the private reserve. Most of you don't know this, but I actually grew up on the radio. I mean, literally. My dad owned a station, and my mother, who was a singer and rather brilliant comedian, began to host a morning show soon after I was born. And I was part of that show from the moment I could talk. We broadcast live from our kitchen, and every now and then recorded down at the station, which was also live. So this show went on for about 5 years, and there was always an element of surprise with me. I was called Little Matthew, and this gave my mother plenty of opportunities to showcase her improvisational wit. But there was one time when I left her speechless. We were recording at the studio, and I was wriggling around in my seat, and my mother said,
"Matthew, why are you fidgeting?"
And I said, And she said,
"Matthew, why are you fidgeting?"
And I said, And she said,
"Matthew, you have to keep still. Why are you fidgeting?"
And I finally said,
"Because my penis is stuck to my leg."
I remember seeing the engineer on the other side of the glass fall out of his seat.